Bob McCallum, it's John Shannon. Welcome to Thursday. Although I probably shouldn't say that, Shannon, because as a podcast, people will listen to this. They may listen to it a month from now, and it might not be a Thursday. In fact, there's probably a 6 in 7 chance it won't be a Thursday.
But even if they listen to it tomorrow before the next hockey Thursday. Game or the next basketball game, it won't be, or the next Jays game, it won't be.
Furthermore, the longer we are in this pandemic, the relevance of the day of the week is pretty much zero. I know I wake up on a regular basis completely and totally unsure of what day it is. One day it's like Groundhog Day. One day is like the next day.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, John.
It's Thursday.
Thank you, John. It was delightful seeing your live face yesterday. Mr. Shannon dropped by my humble abode.
Yes.
We exchanged gifts. So to speak.
Yeah.
Not from each other, but.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point.
We both sent things for the other.
I gave you your Haley Wickenheiser t-shirt, and you gave me my George McPhee coach's jacket. I sent that to a couple of friends of mine that work for the Golden Knights. I said, hey, now I'm senior management. No, I mean, you know, I'm in the senior management crew. So, and my fear last night was had the Golden Knights won, which they didn't, they lost in overtime. I was going to be required to wear it for every game.
Don't tell me did you have it on last night? No.
I sent George a picture saying, here's what I look like in my coach's outfit. What do you think? He says, if we win.
Well, the other game that took place last night was Montreal, Winnipeg.
I thought you were going to talk about the Jays. Holy smokes.
Well, comeback in the 9th inning last night.
Wow.
Yeah,
that was good. That was something. I even got excited about that one.
Yeah, Manoah was a little rusty, a little rough, rather, in his rather brief appearance. Still showed lots of ability to get guys out, but...
was it four hits in 4 innings?
I think it's 3 1/3 he pitched in total, just a couple of long balls, a couple of 3 long balls. And anyway, Blue Jays are down 4-1 at that point and managed to score, 3 in the 9th?
They were down 5-3 when Bichette got to the plate, yeah. And then he tripled and boom, boom, boom.
Yep, boom, boom, boom. A couple of walks and Blue Jays win
6-5. You know, it's funny, Bob. Not to try to derail the conversation like I've never done before. I like watching baseball outside, and to watch that game last night in Buffalo,
in the rain.
That didn't bother me. I don't think it bothered me.
Well, no, you were dry. That's why. Yeah.
But I'll tell you what. It does make you think that with the future of this franchise, if they should build a stadium that is quote unquote outdoors as opposed to a dome.
Well, I think I've told this story more than a few times, you know,
if I hear Downs View one more time, I'm going to,
well, but you, whether you like it or not, is not relevant. But the point I was going to make was that the conversation I had with Mr. Beeston at that time surrounded entirely the notion of an outdoor stadium with a roof that could close.
Sure.
Vis-a-vis Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, Seattle, Arizona, lot all those stadiums, yeah.
That these are fundamentally outdoor facilities, not climate controlled.
Right.
So you can't turn on the air conditioning. But you can cover them.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I have no idea what the statistics are today, but I think in the first season that Milwaukee was open, the roof was closed 9 times.
Yeah.
They covered the stadium 9 times.
Well,
and we all know the weather there is comparable to here.
And let's face it, the Jays over the last 20, well, gosh, maybe since it opened, the Jays have closed the dome as a tactic.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, it's a closed stadium that they occasionally open,
yeah,
as opposed to an open stadium that they occasionally have to close.
Yeah. So anyway, not to derail it, but it was so nice to see the Jays playing a home game, even though it wasn't in Toronto, in an outdoor environment. I really did like that.
Well, it's a small picky point, but I mean, the other day when they played their first game in Buffalo, the announcers on Sportsnet kept referring to the fact that the Blue Jays are finally playing games in front of people. Well, not only is that not true, it's misleading because
there were people in Dunedin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can categorize those people as not being, or many of them not being, Blue Jay fans, which mm-hmm. is probably true. Mm-hmm. Look, the Yankees trained just down the road. The Phillies just trained down the road. When those two teams went in there, you know, I get it. There's a bunch of fans from Clearwater or from Tampa that are more fans of the Yankees than the Phillies. But, yeah. You know.
The interesting thing is that the ancillary effect, that's a good word, huh? Ancillary? The ancillary effect of all of this is that perhaps Buffalo will now become a Blue Jay town. Because for the longest time, it was because their cable networks there are MSGs, Yankees or Mets.
Yeah.
And so perhaps Buffalo and Buffalo baseball fans will adopt the Jays to a much higher level than they have. And as with the AAA team there, maybe it will help that relationship. I think that may be one positive. Of a very negative situation of not being able to play at home.
Yeah, I can't speak to whether there is an acceptance of the Blue Jays or the Buffalo Bisons as a Blue Jays franchise or not. I don't know what it means, but sure. The more the merrier.
But, you know, our buddy Howard Simon, if you go on the All Sports radio station in Buffalo, 9 out of 10 times they have put Yankee scores and Mets scores ahead of the Jays. You know, and that shouldn't be.
Why? I mean, geographically,
we're closer.
You know,
we're closer.
Well, okay. I mean, we're closer. That's the reason.
Well, we're supposed to have an affiliation.
John, you've got 100 years of Yankee baseball. You've got 60 years of Mets baseball and the opportunity for fans to relate to that. And the Blue Jays, while they've been around for nearly 50 years, didn't have a relationship with the city.
No, I understand.
So now they do, and people go to games. And
okay,
I want to talk about the Shifley Evans thing. Last night.
Yep.
Look, I've watched the play on numerous occasions. It was an unnecessary hit. The puck effectively was already in the net, which doesn't necessarily mitigate that fact. But here's the thought that keeps running through my head. You have a game in which physical violence is not only condoned for the most part, it is promoted.
Well, hold on. Physical violence, Bob. It's a physical game.
Okay.
Well, a body check is a body check violence?
Of course it is.
Well, okay.
If you did it in your home to your wife, you would be charged.
You get into an arena, the moment you get into the gladiatorial philosophy, don't bring. I mean, listen, NASCAR. For every NASCAR race, they don't get charged with speeding. Bob, come on, don't do that.
Well, you can't have a race without speed, can you? But you could have a hockey game without
without body checks. Without body checks, stop.
Of course, you could.
Stop it.
You know you could. I'm not promoting it.
Just stop. You're
being an obstinate old man now.
No,
listen to the point.
Oh, come on. You've found something that you say physical violence. Come on now, Bob. Just please.
Would you say you would say that the Shoffley hit last night was not a violent act?
It was terrible. It was terrible.
But listen to my point. The National Hockey League accepts, promotes, condones that kind of action. And when people react, the league certainly, but fans as well, is almost invariably a result of the result of that action, not the intent of that action or the specifics of that action. Was that an overtly violent and illegal hit?
Yes.
I would say no.
Oh, it was. No question.
How? Why? Based on what?
based on the distance that Mark Scheifele came, 150 feet.
Doesn't matter. That's not the point.
What are you talking about?
That is not the point. That's a theoretically is a charging penalty. That's two. That's a 2 minute minor.
No,
and this guy's going to wind up getting suspended. Why is he going to get suspended?
Read the rule book, Bob.
Why is he going to get suspended?
He's going to get suspended under rule 42.1, which is the charging rule.
No.
No. Okay, Bob.
He's not. He's going to get suspended because Evans got hurt. If Evans landed on the ice, dusted himself off, got up, and skated in celebration for scoring the goal, would there have been a charging penalty? Perhaps, yes. And there should have been.
Sure, there would. And he would have got tossed out of the game, sure.
Well, I don't think he would have got tossed out of the game.
Oh, yeah, he would have. Yeah.
Well, you could. Oh, yeah, he would have.
You have no basis for saying that it would only be a two-minute minor.
I have lots of bases. I've watched a lot of hockey games, as you have, but I don't watch them with blinders on, which apparently you do.
No, you watch them with those darn sunglasses on.
The point of the matter is that invariably, it is the result of the action that causes the National Hockey League to act and respond. Almost never the act itself. Again, Evans gets up last night and is not hurt in any way, shape, or form. I'm not going to tell you it wouldn't have been a penalty. I don't know whether the referee would have called one or not. He should have, because Scheifele took more than two strides and came from a long distance at high speed.
Right. That's a charge.
And that's a charge. Acknowledging
which
that.
they have a right to suspend under.
Well, but that wouldn't have been why. He's going to get suspended because Evans got carted off on a stretcher. And that's what happens.
And you're suggesting he shouldn't be suspended?
I'm not 100% sure of the answer to that question.
Which is really your point.
No, I'm not defending Scheifele. His actions were despicable, but they are despicable under the umbrella of rules and regulations that exist in the National Hockey League. You can't have your cake and eat it too. If you allow, physical contact of that nature and promote it, then periodically, maybe even regularly, guys will go over the line. And where is the line? The line is a line that we as fans, as media, as the league, it just draws a line in the sand. This is okay. But that's not okay. It's not written in stone anywhere. It's theoretical. Mm-hmm. And you can sit here and say that Scheifele's actions were over the line. And I can't argue with you.
Right.
And the reason I can't argue with you is because neither one of us knows where that line is. The line for you, the line for the fan of the Montreal Canadiens, the line for the fan of the Winnipeg Jets, those could be three different lines.
Well, that's always the issue, particularly in this, and we end up talking about social media a ton. It also ends up being such a line based on being a fan of a certain team or a fan of a certain player. How do you measure the public response? Because every person that yells something, it was a legal hit. It wasn't a legal hit. It was a dirty hit. It was a fair play. It was a full body blow. Everybody has bias. And that's where you have to snake through and figure out you're right about the line. I totally agree with you. I do think that the NHL is a little more consistent than most people think, but then you're going to accuse me of being a homer. So,
well, you're an NHL guy. You're a league guy. Yeah, you've always endorsed and supported virtually everything that they've done, and you're entitled to
almost everything. Almost everything.
Well, you're entitled to do that, but I'm not that guy. I like to think that I'm able to look at this at these things personally and.
Okay, so what would you do that? Okay, then what, tell us what you're going to do.
Well,
what are you doing with Mark Scheifele today?
I'm looking at the tape 3 or 4 or 5 or 15 more times. I've seen it several times. I'm not 100% sure that it was.
Are you having a hearing?
What's the purpose of the hearing?
It's actually part of the collective bargaining agreement to
it's
part of the process.
Having a hearing, a decision has already been made that you are going to be potentially subject to some kind of suspension. Am I wrong?
Not necessarily, but I would tell you, you're in the 90th percentile.
Well, I think I'm in the 100th percentile.
Okay.
I don't think you have a hearing if they're, you know, it's like you don't go to trial if you haven't been charged. You know, he's being charged. We just don't know what the amount is. And
well,
now
he was already charged.
He was defend himself.
Yeah, no, that's right. He's and again, under the CBA, he's given a chance to defend himself.
That's right. And he should.
Yeah.
But he's subject, barring the unforeseen, he's going to get suspended. I'm not sitting here saying, John, today, right now, I've seen it often enough to make a personal evaluation. And my evaluation of whether it's suspendable or not is really irrelevant in the process, as is yours and every other fan who's out there. Because, of course, Montreal fans want the guy's head taken off. And Winnipeg fans say, well, it was a hard hit, but, and it was unfortunate that he hit it. It caught his head, the contact did, and then he hit his head on the ice too. I'm sorry. I've got a bit of a cough. In any event, I tried.
So to you're saying that this issue is just symptomatic of the issue that goes on with hockey on a daily basis.
Well, that's all it is. It's not every day because it doesn't happen every day, but it happens with some regularity. That there is a line, it is an invisible line, and it is inevitable that these kinds of incidents are going to take place. Again, if Evans gets up and is not hurt, I think the most he gets is a 2-minute charging penalty, and it's with seconds left in the game, which means, and it's 5-3 now, so it's completely inconsequential. Mm-hmm. And we are not having this discussion. And that happens in almost every game. But if you hit somebody and that player is hurt, unless it is overtly accidental, the Tavares injury was not a hit.
In the end, Mark Scheifele, one of the reasons that will come out of the ruling, I expect, will be attempt to injure. And believe it or not, attempt to injure is suspendable. Which is a great comparison to the John Tavares situation, because Perry hit him by accident. It wasn't an attempt to injure.
That's right. That was my point.
Mark Scheifele did go at Evans.
Well, the intent to hit him. But did he have an intent to injure? Now, intent, we've had this.
You can't measure intent. You can't measure intent.
You cannot measure intent. You cannot be sure of anything when it comes to the word intent, because in order to do that, you'd have to rewind the tape in some guy's brain. And we are not able to do that. So
don't give anybody any ideas.
We've spent all of this time so far talking about hockey, and we're not going to do that for the rest of this conversation, I don't think.
No.
My friend Matt Devlin will join us. The NBA playoffs are ongoing. The Raptors are doing nothing, like the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, but look, what about Danny Ainge leaving? What about LeBron James on the verge of elimination?
These are things we will discuss.
Yes.
Patience, my friend.
I have none, Bob.
I have less than you. We will come back with more when the program continues after these messages. We are back. The argument has been postponed for the time being.
Bob's
it wasn't
totally
exactly fisticuffs. It was, but it was a dispute.
Full body blows.
Well, as is allowed in podcasting, I believe.
That's right. Suspendable.
Check the rules.
But that's right.
34-1.
I was going to say 42-1. You beat me to it.
All right. It's McCowan and Shannon, and look at the cat dragged in. It's Matty D, Matt Devlin, who's. Well, I forget. Did we say you're gonna? We can tell people where you are or not. Yeah, are you hiding?
No, I'm
you're not in the witness protection program or
no,
anything?
No, I'm down in the U.S. actually visiting family. I hadn't seen my folks in quite some time, as both of you know, and my wife hadn't seen her family in quite some time, as all of us are going through this, right? And
yeah.
And so my brother had been helping out with my parents. They're, you know, kind of at that age. And so, you know, as soon as the Raptor season ended, just, you know, felt it was important to get down and see some loved ones. And so, you know, that's what I've been able to do. Went out and, you know, been here, you know, now for a couple of weeks and spending time with family. And I think we all can value that, right, at this time. So.
Well, hey, Matt, Bob's of that age, too. You didn't visit him.
That's only because I wasn't allowed to go to his palatial estate. You know, as you can see, I'm in a cabin here. You know, his palatial estate is a whole lot. They don't let me on the grounds.
Oh, I see.
The palatial estate will belong to someone else shortly. So if you're going to come by, you better hurry the hell up. And you're in one of my favorite parts of the country. I must say, I love Southern Connecticut. You know, in the Mystic area, and you know, you're close enough to New York to scoot down there if you want to, for a day, even for an evening. You can jump on the train, you know, and it's really nice there. I'm envious. Not much has happened with the Raptors, just to get this out of the way at the beginning here. Not much has happened since the regular season ended. As you have had an opportunity to digest the course of this season, when do you think we start to find out what the plan is for next year, both with Masai and with the team? Do they wait? I assume they wait until the playoffs are over, yes?
Yes. I mean, I think that that's something that will roll out here as we head towards the NBA draft. You know, the Raptors are going to be operating out of, you know, the Tampa area because it makes sense, right? You know, everything is there. So they'll have pre-draft camp workouts and they'll have players come in there. But I think that that will unfold. I think that there's a chance, you know, that Kyle does return. I do believe, and I think we're seeing this, you know, John and Bobcat, we're seeing this in the playoffs right now. Everybody says that the NBA is about one player. If you have the one player, it's not there. You have to have depth, and you have to have the right people around that one player or two players or three players. We saw that when the Raptors won the title. I think that this team is a lot further along than last season would tell you. And I think, you know, we've all talked about the reasons why, and people may look at it as excuses, but it's the reality of what happened and to the Raptors. And then I think as Masai said, and this is the thing that I admire so much about him, is that, you know, he's not there to be in a play-in round, right? You know, he wants to win it all. And, you know, he clearly, along with Bobby Webster, assessed that, you know what, this year is just, you know, this year with everything going on, we're not going to win it all. And so, you know what, let's go ahead and, you know, let's pull back, let's take a look, and let's now move forward. So it's a team that I believe is still extremely close. If you end up bringing Kyle back, you add a piece here or there. It's a team that I believe, you know, can still be in that mix with Brooklyn and Milwaukee and Philadelphia for sure. So I think that all of that will emerge. All of that will be played out over the course of the next, you know, month or so.
The two LA teams that are still in this.
For now.
I'm sorry, John?
For now.
Yeah, well, that's the point.
Yeah.
Were considered favorites last year.
Yeah.
And simultaneously would be among the teams that would be considered favorites this year. And both of them are in peril.
Yeah.
Which of the two is more surprising?
Well, I think that the Lakers is health driven, right? I think it boils down to Anthony Davis not being healthy. I would say also that, you know, they did lose some surrounding cast, right? They did lose a Danny Green. And I know, you know, he wasn't, you know, buckets every single night during the playoffs last year, but he's a presence that you have to guard on the scouting report. And they also had Dwight Howard, who's now in Philadelphia, right? So they did lose a little bit of that. And but not having Anthony Davis. So again, goes back to, well, you have LeBron. Yep, but you still need depth. You need Anthony Davis to be healthy. The Clipper thing, you know, I often wonder, and, you know, how do you know? You know, I often wonder if Kawhi thought, you know, geez, you know, things are pretty good in Toronto, because he had a tremendous, tremendous group of players around him. The Clippers don't have, even with Paul George and all of his accolades and how good of a player he is. Which one's more surprising? I quite honestly, I don't think either of them are that surprising, Bob. And that's because injuries with the Lakers, and then also the Clippers. You know, this has been something that we've seen before from them. So I'm not surprised. And Luka Doncic is the real deal. He is the real deal. But we also know how difficult it is to close games out, right? And so close series outs. And so this will be a grand test for him. But I am a huge fan of Luka Doncic. And I've said this more times than I can remember, that imagine the Phoenix Suns with Luka Doncic and Devin Booker and now Chris Paul. He's DeAndre Ayton's a great, you know, player. But with the way the league has gone, a player like Doncic, or imagine Atlanta, and I know Trae Young is an exceptional player as well, but, you know, Doncic is, he's, you know, turned pro at 13, 14 years of age, and he's big and strong, and he can handle, he can shoot, and he's a dangerous player.
You know, this is, the NBA has been such a copycat league over the last couple of decades. You know, you get a big three, everybody's going to get a big three. You're going to play with your friends. You know, you're going to do that. But are we seeing another change now again, another evolution of this league, when you look at how successful Phoenix has been, how Utah has kind of taken it to another step in a different manner? Is there a chance that the NBA goes away from, you know, the superstars playing together and trying to win with what I would describe as a lesser second group because of salary issues?
Yeah. Well, you know, look, it's I don't know yet, because I think, you know, Brooklyn is still there, and you can certainly talk about Philadelphia and the depth that they have, and Milwaukee, the depth that they have. Atlanta is an extremely deep team. Trae Young is a dynamic player, but they did a great job signing Bogdanovich, you know, Gallinari, John Collins. I mean, the list goes on. They really stepped up over the course of the offseason to provide some depth and shooting, and Herter, who is a draft pick. So I don't know, John, if we'll see that. I think that there's a limited number, let's be honest, there's a limited number of players that really move the needle when it comes to that, right? It just so happens that, you know, Brooklyn has, you know, three of them, and, you know, the Lakers have two, one of them's injured right now. The Clippers have one. And then Utah's done a great job. I think, you know, Donovan Mitchell is just he's a spectacular player. So, and they've, you know, again, they have shooting around him, and you got a big in the middle that can rim run, that can defend. So they've done a heck of a job there, but I don't know if we're there yet. Right. Okay. But to your point, and this is something that, as we know, is, you know, something that we see in hockey as well, that when you go through the contracts and when you go through each roster, we see, you know, there is that clump at the top, right? And then there's that significant drop, and then you're filling out your roster.
That's kind right of now. My point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're filling out, and we're seeing that across the board for sure, John. Like in Milwaukee's a prime example, right? They have, three players that are up there, and then there's that significant drop. And by the way, those players are playing key roles on these teams, right? Because you need that in this salary cap world, where the money is going to a small, the big money, right, is going to those top two, three guys on each team.
I know I brought this up before, and at the risk of being repetitive, not quite a year ago when the NBA came back after the shutdown, the COVID shutdown, and they created this 8-game kind of mini regular season before the playoffs, but not letting everybody in. The Phoenix Suns were a team that only got into that because they had a mathematical chance of still making mm-hmm. the playoffs. The Phoenix Suns, lest anybody forget, won all 8 games.
Yeah,
I believe they were the only team to run the table and still didn't get in to the playoffs out of circumstance. And many, myself included to some extent, kind of disregarded that as maybe some kind of a fluke or whatever. Although I did make mention, we better keep our eyes on Phoenix because they were playing for something and they played hard and they played well and they won games. Now, maybe the opposition wasn't playing for the same thing they were, but, and this year they come out and they have a really good regular season. And now they're on the verge of winning a playoff round. This is a real good team and a team that is still pretty young. And
except for the old man.
Well, except for one guy who is, you know, leading the charge, but this is a pretty good team, Matty D.
It is. And I would say this, that after years of living in the lottery, right, you hope that you make some decisions along the way. And let's not forget that Devin Booker is, you know, still young, was taken at the end of the lottery, but really, you know, is a, you know, special player. And Ayton was taken number one overall. He fills that, you know, that role of being a rim protector and, you know, being able to, you know, roll to the rim on the offensive end, playing the pick and roll game, which is important when you have Chris Paul. And so I think the addition of Monty Williams cannot be understated in this. I think sure. he has brought stability. And then, you know, credit Chris Paul, who, you know, after things didn't go well in Houston, you know, went to Oklahoma City and embraced that role in Oklahoma City. And now here he is in Phoenix doing it once again and playing, you know, exceptional basketball. And it's good to see because, you know, the Phoenix Suns, before, you know, we always talked about their destination spot. You know, Phoenix was one of those spots, as we know, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, people, you know, went for us that, you know, grew up watching the NBA, you know, whether it be the 70s, 80s and into the, you know, the 90s, early 90s, you know, they had great teams, great fan base. It was a destination spot, you know, players wanted to go and play there. And then, you know, obviously they struggled. And sometimes, as we also know, too, you know, that it takes a while sometimes for an organization to find themselves again. And you think along the way, you're making the right decisions, but then sometimes, you know, they're not. And, but yet, you hire, you know, good people and you draft well, and eventually things will, you know, turn around. And I think that along with the addition of a Chris Paul has really elevated them. And it's great to see the Suns back in the mix.
You know, you talked about Monty Williams and you talked about Chris Paul, and Chris Paul's been a little lame in the playoffs. I mean, hurt. And yet it was fascinating to hear him talk after one of the last games saying that Williams was going to not dress him, was going to put him on the bench. And Paul insisted, "Oh no, I'm playing." A relationship like that of a veteran player and a new coach is an interesting one. That's an interesting dynamic that the coach would be able to allow Chris Paul to play. And not only play, he played great that game. That to me speaks volumes of where this team has come from, don't you think?
Trust, right? Trust. And, you know, having that conversation and, you know, looking into, you know, the eyes, right? I've had those conversations with Nick Nurse about, you know, his players at times and, you know, getting a sense and a feel for, you know, it's like, It's like when the manager goes out to, you know, the mound, right? And looks in the, okay, hey, you want this guy? Okay, you want this guy? Okay, we're going to let you, you know, we're going to let you do this. And so, you know, those moments do happen. And, you know, when they're in the playoffs and they happen, you know, it's also one of those things that could really rally a team too, right? You kind of like, yeah, you know, and so again, as I said, I think it's a great marriage with Chris Paul there and Monty and then the younger players that they have. And, you know, Monty has his experience from New Orleans and I, and as a head coach and, you know, he's gone through so much that you just, you know, feel good about, you know, the Suns.
Do you think that's the role that Kyle could play for this Raptor organization?
Well, I think,
or does he already?
Yeah, I think he does already. And I think that, you know, again, as I said, that, you know, this is a roster, I believe that, you know, Raptors back in Toronto, Raptors with fans, you know, this is not only a playoff team, but it's an upper echelon Eastern Conference team. And, you know, there was growth with Pascal, there was growth with OG, there's growth with, you know, Fred VanVleet. We know that, that there was a question mark in the middle. I think that that's something that, you know, they, you know, saw, they addressed it. I think it's also really fascinating. You think about, I mean, how good is this offense, you know, that players are putting up numbers that they haven't, you know, put up before. Right. And, but it's all based on what you do defensively. And mm-hmm. So, you know, Ken Birch was, you know, great. And Freddie Gillespie, Gilly, as they call him, and, you know, he was, you know, a great find for them in the middle, brought energy, and that was important. And, you know, I like the Gary Trent Jr. Deal. And so I think also now gets into a little bit of a bigger, you know, discussion with specifically to the Raptors is that do not discount the summertime development that they did not have, you know, last season because of the pandemic with Malachi Flynn and Jalen Harris. You know, he showed, you know, some exceptional skills.
But in fairness, nobody had that, Matt. In fairness, nobody had that.
Nobody had that, but right. But I would just, you know, I'll just say that, you know, when you look at organizations that do a really good job of developing players, I think we all agree Raptors are in the top three. I do, as both of you know, in any sport, in any organization or any league, you look around and there's those that can develop and those that just don't. But you're right. A lot of teams didn't have that ability, but I think the Raptors team is right back in the mix. And I think if Kyle ends up staying, I think, you know, he continues to play that pivotal role that he has always played. And, I don't think, and I thought it was really interesting, Norman Powell, I think we talked about this before, but when he got traded to Portland, you know, he came out in the Players Tribune and talked about how, you know, Kyle and DeMar took him out and took some rookies out and, you know, took him shopping. And, you know, Kyle's one of those guys where he plays hard every single night, as we know. And then when it comes time at U.S. Thanksgiving or Christmas and you're looking for, you know, somebody to get the group together, Kyle's the one that's getting the group together. Right. And that's, you know, that's important.
We're going to take the break. We'll come back with more. Matt Devlin is with us back after these messages. It's Bob McCowan. It's John Shannon. It's Matt Devlin. Let me ask you about, this is not necessarily pertinent in the midst of this pandemic, but it appears as though we are headed for relative normalcy by the time this fall comes by, and probably in all sports. How do you feel about receding in the playoffs? And just for clarity for everybody watching or listening, one plays eight out of the gate. Should one then play the worst seed in round two and then again in round three? And isn't that, I guess I'm giving my opinion off the top, isn't that the fairest way and the best way to encourage people to pay attention to the regular season, because ultimately those standings have importance, significant importance.
Is that a, well, is that a discussion within just conferences, or is that
across the board? I don't know. I'm opening to that up.
Yeah.
Traditionally, East and West.
Yeah.
Well, you do that because
maybe you go 1-16
travel.
But you do it 1-8 because you normally have an imbalanced schedule. You play more games against Eastern Conference teams than you do against the West.
I'll buy that.
And then the East and the West to me, becomes, travel. Look at when you look at, baseball, I was one of those, that enjoyed, the American League playing in the American League and the National League playing in the National League. And those days are long gone, as we know. Divisions in basketball, as we also know, really,
they don't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything other than the fact that you're playing teams within your division more. And as we know, the Atlantic Division is a really good division now. So I'm not necessarily one for a reseed. I think that you have to put a level of importance on the regular season. I think that, the team that finishes first earns that right. And so you go 1-8, but then you still have 2-7 and 3-6 and 4-5. And I'm good with that. The interesting debate's going to be, this play-in. And is it something that is worthy to continue on? And then the other debate that is now popping up once again is this within the regular season, the idea in the NBA of starting a tournament, right? Of having this, tournament play happening. So the play-in, I can see a value there. And because I think it puts, it makes it a little bit more difficult to say, okay, hey, we're out of the mix this year, because you can always be in the mix, right, from a play-in perspective. But, I'm a little bit indifferent to it. I can see where they would want to do it. I think it helps, from teams tanking. So I can see the value there. The idea of an in-season tournament, I know a lot of great leagues do it around the world. I don't know if I'm there yet with that one. Again, I'm a little bit of a traditionalist, but understand that, in the construction of a season and a schedule, but I understand the fluidity of it and the television aspect of it.
How do you feel about the reseed question, John?
Well, I mean, I think you have to reward the teams that are seeded higher to play the lesser teams in the playoffs. So that if for instance, one versus eight and one wins, then it plays whoever the lowest seed is next. The problem becomes is what networks and what league offices have tried to do across the board. And this has been a discussion in the NHL as well, is that for some silly reason, they want to be able to say, so the winner of this game team plays this. They want to simplify it for bracket. Not the hardcore fan. Yeah. They want to do the bracket. They want to simplify it, not for the hardcore fan, because the hardcore fan will watch anyway. They want to simplify it for the casual fan to say that, if the Winnipeg Jets, the irony of it this year in the NHL is that they have been able to do it with this system, because the winner of Montreal versus Winnipeg does play the winner of Colorado versus Vegas, just because of the amount of points each team has. And so it does create a little bit more of an awareness as the playoffs go on. But what you're doing every time you do that is you diminish the value of the regular season. And the regular season we have taken for granted in so many ways in so many sports. We do it all the time.
Don't you think that reseeding actually adds value to the regular season?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I think it should be reseeded all the time.
And would you go 1-16?
In my opinion, the only way you do that is if you have a balanced schedule, Bob. If you have a balanced, and that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
You know, because listen, when we look at any sport, our buddy Lou Lamoriello, he wanted to play when he was at the Devils. He wanted to play the Rangers 16 times.
No, I get
it. He wanted to play they want to be able to sell tickets. They want to be able to create rivalries within their own regions.
I get it.
And so you can't have both. You can't have both. I mean, the NHL has done it, and it was an abysmal failure for 3 years, and they went away from it.
The point I think I'm trying to make here, Matty D, is I think all leagues should aspire to have the two best teams, assuming they progress, the two best teams have the opportunity to meet in the championship game. And as long as you break it down by conference, you can't guarantee that. Mm-hmm. It's an impossibility. You could have the two best teams in one conference. You could have the three or four best teams in one conference. Yep. And in fact, we have seen that a lot in the NBA, mm-hmm. Where you could make the argument that the two or three best teams in the NBA were all in the Western Conference. So they were going to meet invariably. Two of them were going to meet in the semifinal.
Well, think about the NHL right now with Vegas and Colorado.
Colorado.
I mean, they're meeting in the second round.
But this year, I'd like to think this year is an anomaly.
This year was
convenience, 56 games, travel was an issue. This is an anomaly.
I will say this, once you get into the whole 1 through 16 conferences move aside, the issue then does become, travel. Right. There is some travel piece to that, that is legitimate. Right. Based upon, if a team's in the Eastern time zone and then all of a sudden you got a 7-game series and you're going back and forth west, and you're in the second round.
But honestly, I couldn't care less, Matty.
Yeah. Fair enough.
If you got to go 2-3-2, fine. Play 2-3-2. Yeah. This is professional sports.
Nobody wants to play 2-3-2.
Well, I don't care. If you play 2-3-2, if the travel is that bad,
no,
go play AAU basketball. This is the NBA, and it's not for wimps.
Yeah,
and if you got to go from coast to coast three times in the course of a series,
I don't think anybody should mind the travel. Yeah. I agree with that part.
If you even have to add an extra day between games in a series, that's not going to ruin my life.
Yeah.
No, but then you'll complain about how the schedule's been dragged out, Bob.
Oh, I'll complain about something else. There's no question about that. I didn't say I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I just won't complain about that.
Yeah. Hey,
I want to see an opportunity to see the two best teams. That's all.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong on that. Hey, so let me pose something to you. And I won't put names in it yet. So during the season, we kept hearing how an NBA team was underachieving, and the coach was in trouble, and he may not make the season, and he's going to get fired, and he won't be back next year. And then he gets promoted. He becomes the president of basketball operations.
Oh, I got it.
Because that's what happened in Boston. Because, Danny Ainge leaves, and Brad Stevens is now in charge after having a mediocre season. And we all talked about it halfway through the season. Has Brad Stevens lost his team?
Well, I think it is – does it boil down to dollars? Because he signed an extension last year. And so I just wonder, is this something — he's only 44 years of age. Is this something, and interestingly enough, Indiana University, that was a job that, a lot of people felt that Brad Stevens would be interested in. That didn't happen, obviously. Mike Woodson, who's a former pro player, played at Indiana, pro coach, ended up there. But anyway, the long and the short of it is, I think that some of this — I could be really off on this — I think some of it is that they signed him to an extension last year. Mm-hmm. And so, do you let him go? Danny retires. I think people forget too, where the Celtics were when Danny took over. He did a heck of a job for a long period of time. And Brad Stevens, You know, you just wonder, is this something that he's going to be running the Celtics for a long time, or is this kind of, okay, he's under contract, you know, maybe he does it for a couple of years and we're going to transition, and, you know, and he's going to go back to college or something like that. I don't know. I, you know, as much money, right, as everybody, yeah, you know, a lot of teams lost a lot of money this year with no fans in the stands. And do they say, well, geez, we're paying him X number of dollars, we're going to move you over here for now. I don't know.
Did you ever get a sense that Ainge was nurturing Stevens for the job?
That's a good question. I don't know if anybody had that sense, but I could see where Danny, you know, at 62, after being there for that length of time, I could see also where he was a little bit like, okay, you know, it's time. And I know for, you know, my sense is that they signed Brad to an extension, they owe him money, they wanted to make a coaching change, and instead of having him,
they promoted him.
Well, a promotion generally should come with an increase in salary, and I'm not sure he's going to get that.
Well, I think the general manager is probably going to make less than, in a lot of situations, as we know, will make less than the coach, right? In certain situations, but I think, you know, I mean, look at, people have been very critical of it, right? I think Brad is a really good coach. And I always have wondered about how he handles the room, because for whatever reason, some of the additions that were made along the way just never really gelled, you know, right. And you wonder, you know, you then get into the discussion, is he good with really young players in comparison to star players and emerging star players? And then that gets into a whole other, you know, different conversation. It, you know, look at the early candidates that you're hearing. Jason Kidd obviously is one. And he's, as we know, has been a head coach in Brooklyn, been a head coach in Milwaukee, has had success, been on the Laker bench. To me, it'll be interesting to see which direction the Celtics go. And I'm not sure, is it going to be Brad's hire? Or is it going to be ownership's hire? And right. I just get that sense it's going to be ownership's hire.
I mean, with the Jason Kidd thing's an interesting one, because don't you think, again, I'm not close enough to what's going on in Los Angeles to suggest this, but I mean, if they really like Jason Kidd, won't Jason Kidd inevitably be the head coach in LA? And it's Frank Vogel that's in trouble.
It's interesting. I don't know how to, you know, he won a title last year, Frank Vogel, as a Jason Kidd as an assistant. You know, you have injuries this year. But
you don't want to lose a guy. You don't want, if you get a sense that you're going to lose a guy that you think's the future of your organization, do you start to, I mean, that's what happened to Lou Lamoriello and Kyle Dubas. Yeah, that's right. What happened in Toronto. You know, we don't want to lose Kyle, so we have to lose Lou.
Yeah.
And you wonder if, and by the way, how did that work out so far? You wonder for the Jason Kidd scenario, would he be great in Boston? Probably. But would the Lakers ever say, well, we can't afford to lose Jason Kidd?
Yeah, and I read about, you know, Sam Cassell and Lloyd Pierce as well as, you know, two other names. You bring up a good point. It'll be interesting, because if the Lakers do go down, you know, here early in the postseason, what do they say, well, it's just because of injuries, or do they think that, you know, it's time for an adjustment there? As we know, it's kind of what the Clippers did. And
right.
You know, Doc Rivers.
How's that work out?
Look at what Doc's doing, right? And Philly, and you know, obviously Embiid's injured, but he's done a great job. I mean, Doc's a great coach, and Ty Lue's a really good coach too. You know, and then sometimes it's not even, you know, and you guys know this. I mean, it's sometimes personnel driven too. I mean, think of what Nate McMillan is doing in Atlanta. I mean, he's done. Clearly they felt organizationally that they need to make a move you know, away from Lloyd, who's considered to be a really good, you know, young coach. And, you know, you had Nate McMillan, who has been there before, done it, and sure, he's done a heck of a job. You yep. know, he's done a tremendous job. And you think of the personnel that they've added, you know, so it's interesting. It's an interesting conversation. We'll see kind of how it all plays out. But my feel on the Brad Stevens is that they gave him an extension last year in the bubble, if you guys recall. And so I think that maybe instead of just letting him go and, you know, there's offsets, as we know, in these deals, but you know, if you're paying somebody an exorbitant amount of money, you might be thinking, you know, geez, now is not the time to take that on. I don't know.
There's only offsets if you get another job, Matt.
There's only an offset, right? And you know, there was conversation always, you know, with Brad and Duke, right? And we know Coach K stepping aside, and they've already named, you know, the heir apparent in John Shire, one of the owners of you know, the Celtics is very close to the Duke program. So, you know, there's people always saying, well, maybe he's a guy that goes there, but you know, now the Indiana job's already, so it'll be interesting. You know, maybe he says, you know, I'm gonna step back for a couple of years, oversee it, and then, you know, he'll be coaching on the sidelines again, whether it's college or the NBA. We'll wait and see.
Enjoy your time in Southern Connecticut, and we'll probably leave you alone for a little while here.
We didn't even get into the NHL or the OHL draft that's coming up, and I mean, there's so many.
Anybody we know in it?
Well, you know, the projected number one OHL pick is actually from outside of Buffalo, New York, a young player by the name of Quentin Musty, who played for the New Jersey Avalanche this past year.
And by the way, this is our junior hockey scout, Matt Devlin.
And he's a center, 6'2", 6'3", you know, 185, 190 pounds.
Devlin.
By all reports, he is a...
Shut up.
We're on in Mississauga. The Steelheads are on the
clock. Shut up.
Come on.
Honest to God.
I am all, oh, you know, so
you're not getting like, paid by the minute here.
Shannon loves this because, you know, we text during, as we're flipping back and forth.
Well, keep texting and keep it the hell off of this podcast.
No.
I hope the two of you have a lovely texting relationship.
No, like I'm, you know, we're watching NBA games, NHL games, and he's getting the biggest kick out of this because, you know, after, you know, living in Canada for the length of time I have, I mean, I've
you are fully converted, man. You are fully converted.
I, you know, we're texting about OHL stuff. We're texting about NHL stuff. I mean, it's all good. Look at, thank you guys for having me.
We didn't even get his opinion on the Shifley hit. Look at that.
I can't. No, stop. All right. No. No,
I will say this.
That's it.
I feel for Jake Evans because he had as you both know, unfortunate situation before in a hit. Right. And Jake is local from Toronto. Not that, you know, I just, you feel for him because he really carved out a great role with Montreal, and you hope that he's going to be okay. He was a St. Mike buzzer, played at Notre Dame, and just you know, it's just unfortunate, you know, unfortunate situation. So wish him certainly the best.
Well, he's doing okay apparently today. So
good. Shifley has a hearing, I hear.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yep.
Not in person, obviously, but
no. Go ahead, Bob. You can close the show.
Look at Bob looking at it.
Bob, you can close the show now.
No, it's a damn, you two guys, you know, you'd go for hours.
You know, we do.
A professional broadcaster and a former producer director.
I'd like to think
have
I'm a
no concept of time at all. At all.
Well, what time do you have?
The show is no longer on the radio. Otherwise, we'd have to edit the hell out of it.
Oh, please.
Well, right. Not please.
Are we doing
where we are?
Your podcast is doing phenomenally well. So, congrats on that.
Well, thank you very much. But it's no thanks to blabbermouths like you two.
No, I'm crediting the producer. I think the producer's done a magnificent job.
Well, he's done a good job of getting guests. If only the producer didn't co-host the show. Devlin, we love you dearly, and we'll bother you down the road. And hopefully we'll see you before the crick rises. All right.
And feed the dog, Matt. Feed the dog, please.
You got it. You got
Matty
it.
Matty D.
Take care, guys.
Back to wrap it after these messages. Well, normally we spend some time at the end of the program chatting about various things, but of course, these two Nimrods, Shannon and Devlin, wouldn't shut up. And I'm quite certain that there's nothing else that they want to hear from you today.
You know, here's the bottom line.
Oh, no.
I think Matt misses us. I think Matt misses us.
Matt misses talking. And if he doesn't get an opportunity to talk for 2.5 hours during a basketball game, he needs a place to vent, and he chooses to do it here. Well, and you, of course, won't shut up at the end of an interview and have to keep putting in one more 2 cents. And with Devlin, you can't do that because he knows
there's
no
lots
short
of good
answers.
Questions. There's lots of good questions, Bob.
He knows no short answers to any question. And all you're doing is dragging this thing out, which is what I'm doing right now, and I'm going to stop. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, we'll see you tomorrow. I'm sure Shannon has plenty more to say. Wait till then. Goodbye, everybody.